Good morning. For the summer, what we're doing is called, it's called Jesus Champion of Faith. And that's taken from Hebrews 11 and the little part, little first two, three verses of 12. And in that, there's this crowd of witnesses that give, we don't know who the writer is, but the writer names all these people from Abel all the way through to the prophets and beyond that and other believers. And calls them the crowd of witnesses. And what you'll notice in this is that none of them are heroes of the faith. There's no heroes. We talk about heroes of the faith, but they really aren't heroes. They're just regular people like you and me. They have warts. They have scars. They fall flat on their face and they just aren't pretty all the time. And some of them, you just wonder, how did your name ever make it in that chapter? That's where you want to go. It's like, you shouldn't have been in there. Because in when you hit 12, it says, therefore, and you know, with all these crowd of witnesses, run the race that is set before you. And you do this by fixing your eyes or looking straight ahead at Jesus, the champion of your faith. That's what it says in my translation, the New Living Translation. And it's Jesus. It's what these people all had in common was they had their faith was locked in God. They'd come to a place in their life where they realized the only person I can really entrust my life to is God. That's all I have. That's what I have. And that's what unites that crowd is their faith in God, their faith in Christ. And Jesus is put as the centerpiece of that, that we fix our eyes on that. And so I've asked the various speakers that are going to be sharing this summer to pick one person from that list and speak about them. And even beyond, you can go beyond that. You can go into church history. If someone like last week, Tab did Perpetua and Felicity. And a good job, Tab. It was really interesting to hear about that. And the point is, we're going to show the warts and we're going to show how they stumbled and fell. That's the point. Okay. But what you're going to see as well that in spite of all that, God moved through them. God moved through them and did because of their faith in God. It wasn't because they were perfect or anything like that. Now, this morning, I'm going to be doing what's called a first-person teaching, meaning it's still a teaching, not a performance or anything like that. I'm not doing zero performance, but I'm going to be speaking from as if that person is speaking to you. That's what it is. And the reason for it is for you to hear what that person was going through. So with that, let's move forward. And this person needed notes, so go figure, right? I picked the right person, right? I picked the right person, and so let's go. Have you ever found that sometimes you do all the right things for all the right reasons? And then there's other times you find sometimes you do all the wrong things for all the wrong reasons. And maybe there's something in between that you find yourself in some of the decisions you make. I want to tell you a story about a time in my life when I look back at it, I think I did all the wrong things for all the wrong reasons. Not sure how it happened, not sure how I arrived there, but I did. I'm Jonah ben Amittai. Amittai was my father. We grew up in a city called Gath Hefer. And Gath Hefer is just it's in the nation of Israel, not Judah. Judah was south of us. It was north of Samaria. And Samaria is located between Jerusalem and Damascus. And Damascus is, if you know in today where Syria is, that's where Damascus is. That's where Damascus lies. But I was from Gath Hefer. My father and mother were wonderful parents, actually. They taught us well about the Hebrew faith. My father, he had a love for Israel. He taught me how to love Israel. He taught me how to love my people, to love our culture, and to love our God. And he was a good father. And we loved our nation, and we loved our God, and it was there that things began to get a little murky in my thinking and how I saw things and how I viewed God, how I viewed the world. what happened was, in my mind, I'm thinking, loving God is loving my nation, and also loving my nation, therefore I must be loving God in doing that. It must, when I love Israel, I love God. And God and my nation, Israel, became enmeshed, became like, almost became one and the same. And you may think that's good. And in some regards, it is very good. Something went sideways a little bit for me, a little bit. Now, let me tell you a little bit about my teenage years and coming into my young adult. You know how when you go through that time in your life, you begin to discover things that really interest you. You go, you know, I want to find out more about that. I want to study that. I want to go, I want to do that. I want to do something like that. When I grow up, I want to be like that. I was like that. I was the same. I was really curious about the prophets that were around. Really curious about how they heard God. I was really curious about some of the words that they delivered. And curious in a good way. I would read the prophecies. I would study. I wanted to hang around them. And there are times even that I started to think, you know what? I think I'm hearing God speak to me about me. Now, I know that's not prophecy because that's not. But then it was like I started hearing words for others. And even, crazy as this might sound, I heard words for Israel. And it was like, no. But I had no platform to deliver that because I was just Jonah. And it would be like, why are you talking to us? Right? And but I wanted to learn more. And people started to see this on me. And I hanging around other prophets, they started to pick up on this. And I was invited actually to enroll into the school of, there was a school for prophets to learn, to develop, to explore that. And so I did. And that started to just grow within me. And it was fascinating. And it became apparent to people, to those people, the instructors, some of the rabbis, that obviously there was this calling on my life. And here was the cool thing. I got wind of that my name had come up in the palace of the king. And our king was, he was King Jeroboam II, is who the king was at the time. And I couldn't believe it. I was saying, like, I hope it's good. Right? Because it's like, wow, that's almost sort of amazing. And I'll never forget the day I was walking down through Gath Hefer, down through the market area, and there was another fellow walking, coming the other way. And as he saw me, he went, ah, there's that young prophet Jonah. Good to see you. And I thought, prophet Jonah? Oh, that felt so good because it was like, I'm arriving. I've arrived. And it felt so just wonderful to just to feel that. It felt good to me. Now, one of the significant words I had that came, and I had to bounce this off my mentor and stuff, but it was for the king. And I tried to stuff it, but it was like, no, this is for the king. And so I went to my mentor and I said, should I deliver this? And he said, yes. So the arrangements were made and to deliver. And the word was that, O king, you will recover the territories of Israel from Lebo Hamath to the Dead Sea. That was it. I think God started me off small. Just give a little one, right? And you know what? He did recover those territories. Right? It was like, because for prophets, you're going, oh, please let it become so, please let it be. Right? Because the last thing you wanted was to be wrong. Now, they had some grace for the young guys. They did. They had some grace, which was nice. And so with that, my pursuit of God, my pursuit of being a prophet, my gift, and my love for Israel continued to grow, and it continued to become enmeshed. Now, for me, I was thinking, that's a good thing, isn't it? Like, it felt good, it felt right. And here's the thing, I really believed in my heart that God was going to do great things in Israel, through Israel, for Israel. And by the way, Israel at the time, it was their golden age. Israel was doing well. The nation was doing well. It was going through some good times at that point. But it was then around then that things started to shift in my thinking and in my perspective. A drift started to take place. And I remembered that I loved Israel. And you know what? I would do anything for her. Anything at all. Because in my mind, serving Israel was serving God. It just made perfect sense. Why wouldn't it be? Why wouldn't it be? And so then there was one day, and this is where some of my drift began to get exposed. One day I was doing my prayers, and it was good, but I just started to sense just the presence of God in the room, around me, within me. And it was just, I felt God moving. And then I heard these words. Get up and go to the great city, Nineveh. Announce my judgment against them, because I have seen how wicked the people are. It was clear. I thought about, did I really hear? Am I really hearing you, God? And I heard it again. Go up and go to that great city of Nineveh. I heard it. And for me, it was like, this is a privilege. This is the real deal. This is the big thing, because there's nothing better I'd want to do than to hell, fire, and brimstone's coming down your way. And to declare that and to be the prophet that gets to do that. Because that's not everybody that gets to do that. But I did what I was taught. I took time. I prayed. I thought. I talked to my mentor. And I noticed I had mixed feelings about this. Mixed feelings about all of this. It was like, I'm not so sure. And the reason for that is because as a people, as we were, Israel, the Israelites were proud people. We were proud of who we were, who our God was, our culture. But we also had this other side of us, if you could flip the coin over, and we had this other side that we held disdain for people who disrespected us, for people who mocked who we were as a people, who disrespected our culture, disrespected our God. We held disdain for it. And of course, as you know, one of the people groups that we despised, you could say. We did it all for God, by the way. We did this for God because we knew we were God's chosen people. But it was the Samaritans, those people in the south. We had no use for them. They were just like, they were less than dirt on the bottom of our shoes. We had no use for them. I wouldn't even walk into on their territory. Wouldn't even do it. Had no use for the Samaritans. No use at all. And the Ninevites, they were a wicked people. Now that city had been around for centuries, had its ups and downs, and it was a prosperous city. They did well. It was big. It was one of the notable cities. And by the way, you know where it's located today for you? Northern Iraq. That's where Nineveh is located. And it's right near the city of Mosul in Iraq. That's where it is. But we had no use for it. We had no use for them. Not the Ninevites. Not at all. But what bothered me, what was going on in my head, was the Ninevites had somehow gotten God's attention. And you may think, well, yeah, poor Ninevites, you get God's attention. You don't want to get God's attention. And that's what you don't understand. In my growing up years, the one thing that the Jewish people, that the Hebrew people held on to that was central for them, that was central, was who our God was and what our God was known for. And it was taught over and over and over again. And we were taught and we held and we knew that our God is merciful, compassionate, slow to get angry, and filled with unfailing love. So the reason this whole call to go to Nineveh sort of made me feel uncomfortable, well, there's this thing about prophets. We got to be right. Okay? We can't be wrong. And it felt like I knew what this God was like. And it was like, God, you can't show mercy towards the Ninevites. You can't show compassion. Put that aside right now. If you're calling me to do this, this has to come through. And in my mind, I was saying, I'll be damned if I'm going to be made the fool to go and prophesy something and it doesn't happen. It just wasn't going to be. And basically was saying, find another prophet, God, because it's not going to be me that's going to do this. And so for me, I just needed to get away. I needed to get away from Gath Hefer. I don't know if you've ever felt that at times. Just need to get out of the city. Just need to get out of here. Go somewhere. Go anywhere. Just clear my head. Get away from all the stress. Right? And maybe you have. And I just packed some stuff and I headed south to the port in Joppa. And Joppa was a city down there by the sea. And I got down there and I found a ship that was going to Tarshish. And I went, okay, this is where we're going to go. Because I just need to go. If God's going that way, I want to go this way. Because I don't want to have anything to do. Like, I just got to get out and clear my head. And the day I boarded the ship, it was a beautiful day. It was nice. It was sunny. It was hot. It was warm. But the sea was just rolling. So it was just nice. I got in there. And, you know, it was just like, you know, have you ever gotten away? And as soon as you start getting away, it just feels like I'm leaving everything behind for a bit. And it just feels, ugh. And that happened to me. It was just like, oh, this is so good. And I was getting tired. So I just went down to the hold, which is in the bottom of the boat. And it was a merchant ship. There was no other passengers in that. I was able just to get on this with the other crew members. And I just drifted off to sleep. And then what happened all of a sudden was there was just this bang, bang, bang on the door. And this guy yelling in my face, get up. And it was the captain of the boat. And it was like, what's going on? And then I could hear the wind and the storm and everything rocking. And you got to understand, this wasn't just a violent windstorm like that was taking place, a violent storm. It wasn't just howling wind, it was growling wind. And you could hear the ship heaving and just everything. And I could see the fear on the captain's face. And you know, when the captain's afraid, you got problems, right? And the captain said, listen, what are you doing? He wanted to know, what are you doing sleeping? Don't you see what's happening to us? And I was, sure. And he says, you got to pray, start praying to your God to see, find out why is this happening. And we got to try and figure out and get this stopped. And I was, pray to my God. Okay. And he left. He went with the other crew because he had his thing to do. He had his things to do. And I didn't even have time to think it through. And to me, I was like, why did I do this? And I started to pray to the God I wanted to get away from, which was bizarre. Because the funny thing that happened was I started to pray, asking God, can you please stop the storm? And the unfortunate thing about being a prophet is that you do hear God speak. And I heard God say, Jonah, where are you running to? Why are you running away from me? Don't you know that wherever you go, I am? And I didn't know what to say. And then the crew came down. And then the crew, you know, was brought up with the rest of the crew. And there was, I don't know who it was. It was one of the crew members had this, what they thought was a brilliant idea, that we got to find out what's at the bottom of this. We got to get to the bottom of this. So we're going to draw straws. And whoever draws a short one, it's their fault. And I was like, really? Okay, I'll play your game. Let's do this. And so we drew straws. And guess who drew the short one? Me. And I was like, you got to be kidding. And they looked at me and they wanted to know. They demanded to know, who are you? What nationality are you? Who's your God? What have you done? And I just, you know how I said before I felt the presence of God just in and come around me? I felt the presence of God in the room and coming around me. And I knew I was the one because of the storm. And I told them. And they were like, what? They had two questions for me. What were you thinking? And what do we do about this now? And I didn't. And I just, and in my heart, I was just going, God, you got to help me here. I don't know what to do. And I just had this sense, I got to get off the ship. I got to get off. I got to get off. But where do you get off in the middle of the sea in the storm that was just battering us? And I said to the guys, you're not going to believe this, but you got to hear me. Hear me out. Just listen. You're going to have to throw me overboard. And they were like, what? You crazy? And so the captain ordered the rowing crew, get rowing. We got to get out of this storm. And you know what? They rowed. And it got worse. In fact, we lost ground. We weren't gaining anything. And I said to them, guys, you have to. And it was the captain who said, finally, let's throw him over. Didn't want him to be so quick about it. But they said, okay. And I said, you can just throw me over, okay? And so we're going to pray. And they prayed. They prayed, oh God, do not hold this accountable to us. It was his idea. Okay. And all I did was put my arms like this, close my eyes. And no sooner had I done that, and I just felt myself picked up, and I was over. And when I went over, the waves were horrendous, but I was somersaulting over. And I opened my eyes at one point, and I didn't know up from down. I didn't know which way I was. The storm was horrendous, and I didn't know where to go. And then, I saw this black thing coming towards me, and I thought it was the ship I was going to crash. My body was going to crash into the hull that was underneath the water. But it wasn't. It was this, I know you're not going to believe this. It was this enormous sea beast that I've never seen before. And I knew I was done. I knew I was done. And so I just covered everything. I protected my head as much as I could. And I just said, oh God, help me. Help me. I lost consciousness at that point. I don't know exactly what all happened. The next thing I remembered is I woke up being violently vomited from this beast, whatever it was, into the waves. Everything was much calmer at this point. But the only thing is I could see in the distance, I could see shore. And I was like, I got to get to that shore. And I did my best to go as far as I could, but fortunately the sea was shallow in this area. And I was able at some point, I was exhausted, just exhausted. And I just prayed. I prayed to God, God, and I, you know what you say when you're caught in like that, right? God, I'll do anything for you if you save me, right? And I prayed, God, I'll go to Nineveh if you just save me. And I was able to put my feet, and God gave me the energy to just struggle myself to the shore and get to the shore. And the interesting thing was eventually, just to make a long story short, I did find another boat traveling back to Joppa. I boarded that boat, got back to Joppa, headed back to Gath Hefer, and had to figure out just what was going on. And just spending time for myself. People wondered, is he okay? What happened to him? Don't know. People were concerned, but it was just like, God, I just don't know what to do. I don't. And it was this thought of, I remember I said to God, I'll go to Nineveh, but nothing in me wanted to go. And then I heard the voice again. Jonah, I need you to go to Nineveh. I need you to go. And you wonder, why would I then decide to go? But there is something in me, the fact that God had rescued me from, I should have drowned. I should have been dead. I should have been, there's no reason what happened happened. It shouldn't have happened. I should not have been saved. And I knew in that time when that beast was coming towards me, and I cried out to God, and I just knew God was present with me. That in the midst of what I did, in the midst of my rebellion, God loved me. Just loved me. And I thought, I don't know what's going to come of this, but I'll go to Nineveh. So I packed up some belongings, some food, some supplies, made my trip to Nineveh. And it was a huge city, big city. And I got there and I surveyed it a little bit, walked around. It was a large city. And I then began to prophesy publicly. It's all as I could do because I couldn't get a platform to do it from, meaning I had no connections in Nineveh. People knew I was from Israel. They knew that. And they knew I was a crazy prophet guy. Didn't really have a whole lot of time for me. But the Lord, when as I prayed about it, where do I go, the Lord would give me key points within the city that I was to announce this word for the people. And the word that I gave was, it was this. It was, 40 days from now, Nineveh will be destroyed. How's that for a word? And there was some other stuff I added to it. What was interesting was, if you notice, the word that God told me to give to announce that judgment had come, I changed it a little bit. Nineveh will be destroyed in 40 days. Nineveh will be destroyed in 40 days. Now, here's the crazy thing. Because what do you figure if you're going to do that? If you went out there this afternoon, out there into downtown Cambridge or Kitchener, and you started doing that, what do you think people are going to do? Keep their distance and think you're just crazy. But you know what happened? People were listening. It was like, what? And then even the king was listening. The king is listening? And then a couple days later, I heard that his nobles and the king had written a decree, and they were now going out announcing it and posting it. And the decree said this, everyone is to fast and to put on clothes of mourning. I don't want anyone, neither people or animals, to eat or drink. The decree continued, we have to pray. I couldn't believe it. To the God of Israel and stop doing the wrong things. It's like, what? Are you for real? And they started doing this. They fasted, had the clothing of mourning on them, and things changed. And I was like, oh God, please don't. And my thing was, please God, please just rain down on them. Hell, fire, and brimstone. Please, please. And it was just like my heart knew, I know what you're going to do. I know what you're going to do. Please don't do it. I'm going to look like the fool. Please, please don't do it. So I went to the east side of the city, and I wanted, because it was a high point, I wanted to watch. God, come down now, please come. Burn the city. Do a Sodom and Gomorrah on them like they've never seen before. Please come down. Burn it. Do it. Something. See, the king had said in the decree, maybe God will change his mind. And I want to hold on to the thing that, no, God doesn't change his mind. Do you? But I wanted to, God, just don't let me look like the fool. What I noticed in me was anger building up that they had listened to me. Isn't that weird? I didn't want them to listen to me. I wanted them to mock me. And I wanted God to come down and do his thing. This is what I prophesied. In 40 days, they're going to be destroyed. God, what's going on? Come down. Destroy. It's what I said. And I waited. And I waited. And I waited. Nothing happened. Nothing happened. I lost it. I lost it. And I said, and I screamed to God. I don't know if you've ever screamed to God. I screamed to God and I said, didn't I say before I left that you would do this, Lord? That is why I ran away to Tarshish. Because I know what you're like. We've been taught it. You're merciful. You're compassionate. You're patient. Have unfailing love. I know all this stuff. I also know that you're eager to stop, to turn away from destroying people. You don't want to destroy. You want to love everybody. And I said to God, just kill me now. I'd rather be dead than be alive and have to see my prophecy not come to fruition. And it's almost like the Lord said, you done? Almost like that. Here's the interesting thing. When I took up that camp, when I had that little encampment out the east side of the city, there was one little interesting thing out there. There was this plant that was growing up right beside it. It was almost like a weed. I wondered what it was doing, but you know the nice, beautiful thing about it? It grew up nice enough with broad enough leaves that it provided me protection because it was hot. You think it's hot here right now? Mm-mm. This is cool. What we had there was really, really hot. And there was this nice plant. But after I'd had my little rant and rave, I noticed the leaves starting turning brown. And it was like, seriously, what is going on here? The plant's dying now? And I looked, and there had been a worm that had gone through and cut and eaten through the stem. And I said to God, really? Really? You had to kill the plant? Didn't you know it was giving me comfort? It was the only thing I had for comfort, and you took that away from me too. And then God spoke. And that's when you got to listen. And God said, and I heard God say, is it right for you to be angry that the plant died? And I said, absolutely. Angry enough for me to die. Quiet. And then God said, you want me to care for the plant that is here today and gone tomorrow? But Nineveh has more than 120,000 people and animals that are living in spiritual darkness. Shouldn't I feel sorry for such a great city as Nineveh? And then it went dead quiet. I had lots of time to ponder God's questions because God doesn't give answers to his questions at times. He wants you to figure it out. And I learned some lessons. There were things that I came to realize over a period of time. The first thing I realized was what I would call my misguided patriotism. That misguided patriotism for my country of Israel caused me to identify God with my country. Because you see, for me, God and Israel were one. You may think that's okay. It's not okay because things got skewed for me in my head. I had this skewed belief that to be a God-fearing Hebrew, I must therefore have equal passionate love for my country I live in. For Israel. in my mind, I came to believe that loving my nation was equal to loving God. That when I loved my nation, I loved him. Somehow that took place, and I don't know how that took place. I had this belief that whatever we did as a nation, God was doing it, that God was behind us, that God was with us doing this. The shift was subtle, and it was over a period of time, but the shift happened. I realized that because I realized, in reality, the God of this universe, his kingdom doesn't have borders. There's no borders. God doesn't have any political affiliation with any nation, regardless of their system of governance. God doesn't have any of that. And I realized that I had forgotten what our ancestors, what my rabbis, what my parents taught me, taught us, what was at our center point, which what I would call the heart of God. And you find it in the Torah, where it says, "Hear, O Israel, the Lord your God is one. Love the Lord your God with all your heart, all your soul, and all your strength." And the other part that was part of it that they taught as well was in Leviticus that says, "Do not bear a grudge or take revenge on a fellow Israelite, but love your neighbor as yourself." We were taught that. We knew that. That was in every quiz. We said that all the time. We reminded ourselves all the time. That was who we were. And somehow I had forgotten, totally forgotten it. But that is God's heart. That is his heart. I had come to realize that I was filled with hate toward the people of Nineveh, while God's heart was filled with love for the people of Nineveh. And I also realized later on, that I was actually the recipient of being a witness and a recipient of two miracles that took place in that whole event. I was a witness to God rescuing and transforming an entire city. An entire city. I witnessed it. I saw it. I saw people praying to our God, who is their God now. The other miracle, as arrogant and proud and misguided as I was, God chose to honor me, to be the witness of his deep love for the Ninevites. What I had hoped would be the demise of the Ninevites, God had planned to rescue them, to change their hearts and stop them from where they were going. And that was all driven because of God's love for them. And that day when I came to that realization, my heart was healed and my heart was transformed. And you know what? God always does the right things for all the right reasons. Always does. So today, the next stranger you walk by on the sidewalk or in the marketplace or wherever, remember, God is filled with mercy, compassion, patience, and unfailing love for them. Tomorrow morning when you get up and you look in the mirror, tell yourself, God's thoughts towards me are thoughts of mercy, compassion, patience, and unfailing love. Don't ever forget it. Thank you.